Welcome everybody to the Blue Skies Dronecast. Now this is part two of our interview with the Black Belt Barrister. So without further ado, let's kick it off.
We'll actually sort of change the subject slightly now because we did briefly touch upon privacy, and we've got a couple of kind of questions or things that come up for me and Adam and UAV Hub a lot, actually. So I'll go through the first one, actually, if you'd like. So most of the time we have, I don't know, a hobbyist or an estate agent. They've been called to take a photograph of a specific house. There's sort of neighbours involved, and their houses are also caught up in that one photograph as well. So I suppose that's the first one, you know. Can the neighbour come out and say, you can't use that photograph, or you can't take a drone up to take a photograph of that house because my house is in it too? You know, is that a valid sort of complaint or argument? And where would the pilot stand, I suppose, if that happened?
In a word, no, it's not really a valid argument. There's implications if it's a company that is contracted or commissioned to do these photographs, but only in so much as it engages the Data Protection Act, whereas otherwise it doesn't. Okay. So it's not, either way, it's not really really a problem. It's more of a problem if it's a company doing it, and the person is readily identifiable, and there's more implications. But most of the time, it's just going to be what we call incidental inclusion. So if I were taking the picture of a church and you happen to walk past, you're in the photo, and it's just for my own personal hobbyist website or YouTube channel or whatever it is, you just happen to be in the photograph. That's not really an issue. Whereas if it were a company that's monitoring something and people are readily identifiable and their comings and goings are recorded on an ongoing basis, so the more layers you add to this. Then if you add audio recording, and then let's say the biggest comparison, I suppose, would be if, let's say, you've got a row of houses, but next to it you've got one commercial building. The commercial building, for security purposes, has decided to put up CCTV, which is monitoring the rear entrance, which also covers two or three gardens next to it, which are residential gardens. Let's then say that it's recording it, storing it, it's recording the audio, which is crystal clear, it's 24 hours a day, it's never deleted, you know. For all of those reasons, it's going to be beyond what is reasonable. And so the Data Protection Act is engaged because it's a company, and then the main thing is whether it's reasonable and proportionate, what they are recording for how long, and whether they need audio. All of these considerations come into play. Whereas if you are a hobbyist and you're flying around and someone says, you can't take my photograph, broadly, in the broadest sense, that's not a problem. There'll be some very narrow situations where there will be what you will have heard of referred to as a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Okay.
And under ECHR, there's a right to a private and a respect for private and family life. So, you know, again, if someone was standing with the camera up to someone's house window and recording for 6-7 hours a day, obviously that's in breach of this right. But even then, if it's it's more a consideration for companies than it is for individuals. It's an individual they don't usually have to worry about data protection. Save that if they are recording something, then, you know, if they are recording something that captures other people, there is a possibility of a subject access request, even for your, say, front doorbell, which is
I was about to say that with everyone now, you know, most people have something like that, and you could almost argue either way, I guess, with that, strangely as well. So it's funny.
And so this is the grey area that will remain grey, but again, comes in the common sense. So the the case that I did the Ring doorbell video on, which I'll send you the link to if you haven't seen it.
Oh, brilliant.
I break the case down in full. Mm. The news headlines tried to scaremonger, really, to say, you know, should you now remove your Ring doorbell because of the recording? That's not really what the case was about. Although, ironically, 90% of it was talking about the cameras and what they were recording. It was more about the behavior of the parties and what this man did with the material and the threats that he made in respect of the material that he recorded.
Right.
And the extent that he was recording. So he'd got, you know, four or five cameras and they were watching the garden. They were picking up audio. They were stored. And he was then using them to make threats against the neighbor and all of this sort of stuff. So there was a lot more to that case than just recording your front door.
I see.
Most people, nine out of 10 times, people using a Ring doorbell for the purpose that it's there for, you know, judges have previously said that, you know, just walking up to your front door, you expect to be captured in one sense or another.
Yeah.
So broadly, there's no problem with it. And in the case of, or the question of nuisance, there was actually dealt with trespass as well. So the case of Burstein and Skyviews, reasonably recently in legal perspective from 1978, the guy was flying a plane over houses in much the same way. It was a plane, not a drone, but he was flying a plane over, taking photographs of the house and then offering them to sale for the residents, which it was quite novel at the time. I remember one. I remember growing up, my parents were offered one in the same way. This went to court in 1978. The long story short is that it was neither trespass nor nuisance. So both of those issues were covered. But the trespass was actually following a much older case from 1815 in Pickering and Rudd, flying an air balloon over someone's land. Somebody said it was trespass. And the judge said, no, it isn't.
It's so funny.
They're all sort of encompassed together.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I suppose, you know, you could then argue, well, if he was getting his balloon out every single day and just hovering it somehow over this one house, then obviously then it starts to, it's different then, isn't it? Where, yeah, so I can totally understand how it starts to sort of, get more so. But generally, like you mentioned, it seems to be, it's not that, is it? Yeah, for sure.
I suppose, again, to this, it takes almost somebody to go to court to whether on a specific subject, whether it is just one picture for them to take it all the way to court, to go all the way to a judge, for then somebody to go, okay, right, this is how we now interpret said law, or this procedure, and we're not there. It's not happened as far as I'm aware.
There will be doubtless comparisons drawn with this Ring doorbell case, albeit it was the county court, you know, not the high court and not the court of appeal, but the county court, which are generally follow their own case decisions. But there's always a distinction drawn between cases. How similar is it, or are there any factors that make it different? And so simply, so for example, if someone were to make the same argument that it's recording, but nothing else happened, there'd be a big distinction between the two cases, because in this one, his behavior was deliberately antagonizing the lady next door. So if that's not happening, there's a big distinction between the two.
Yeah.
Although the similarities would remain, and the comparison with that and the Data Protection Act would still remain, because if you are capturing the information, it still has to be, you know, reasonable and proportionate.
I see. Yeah, exactly. It's all in the details, isn't it? I suppose is how you could put it as well. Yeah,
indeed.
Following on kind of the same, I don't know, Adam, do you think we've covered the other sort of couple of ones? I think we almost have, haven't we, then, really, taking photos in public spaces? Yeah, we've covered that already. And I suppose the last one, if you were able to fly your drone in the back garden, if you had enough space and enough distance, I suppose, as we've spoken about with the CAA, could neighbours complain about that? I suppose same sort of thing, is it, I would say, Daniel?
Yes, the only thing this could come close to really is nuisance. But people talk about nuisance on an everyday basis, but it's not an easy thing to make out, actually. For one, there needs to be some kind of damage which is resulting from an ongoing issue which parties have reasonable notice of and things like that. So an example of something that would amount to nuisance is, let's say you do an extension and your builders say it will be much cheaper to have a downpipe that goes straight over your neighbor's fence and gets rid of the water onto their garden. And that's ongoing, and your neighbor notices it's going on for a year. It's eroding all of the ground, and you know, maybe his shed's falling down, or there's ongoing. It's a horrendous situation because your builder said it's cheaper to just dispose of your water over your neighbor's fence. That's a nuisance.
Right, I see. Yeah.
Whereas flying your drone for 10, 20 minutes every other day or something, you can now quite quickly see that's far from the same thing.
Right. So,
and notwithstanding, there is already case law that flying a balloon over someone's house is not trespass. It's still good law. It's a long time ago, but the court would have to give a reason to depart from that original decision, which it would need something. I mean, the balloon obviously just went straight over, and maybe it went over every day or whatever. I forget the details of the case, but the bottom line is it's not nuisance. And so if someone's flying a drone over the property, unless they are hovering it over someone's garden for hours at a time, every day for weeks, and it's causing them distress and... It's probably more likely to be harassment than it is nuisance.
I guess it would be, wouldn't it? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think it's interesting for the listeners, I think, to know kind of the extremes, like your analogy of the water being, that sounds ridiculous because it is, but it's interesting that it has to go that far for it to be a problem. So I think it's nice to hear that, I think, from someone who knows about it.
Well, indeed. I mean, you can apply this analogy to lots of different things. So it's got to be something that's on notice. It's ongoing. It's causing damage. It's more than what is reasonable. But yes, flying a drone over your neighbor's property, I mean, whether you're in within the regulations, it's your problem, not an action your neighbor can take. So, like, for example, it doesn't become nuisance because... or automatically, at least, because you're in breach of your restrictions. It doesn't really change it much. It's negligible depending on the size of the thing, but wouldn't automatically make it nuisance.
It'd be difficult
to make it nuisance. A common one is when we've got CCTV cameras that capture the neighbor's garden. Is probably the most common question is this okay? And the short answer is no, not really, because
it's so all the time, essentially, I guess, is a big problem, isn't it? Yeah, I see.
Yeah. It shouldn't capture more than is necessary. So if it's necessary to get the fence in because, you want to catch who's coming over the fence or whatever, it may capture a slither of the neighbor's garden. A slither of it is probably okay, but as some people have emailed me and said that someone has a camera trained entirely on my garden watching my children play, common sense tells you that's not right.
No.
And incidentally, the Data Protection Act would agree with it. It's
very interesting, isn't it, actually? I do find it, the nuances of it all are where... it's in the details, isn't it? Again, which is quite interesting to hear. Yeah,
I think it's also worth.
I just want to just quickly bring back to sort of the community, because obviously we're very much talking about the public using their drones, but obviously I just want to quickly bring it back to, obviously, if it is a commercial enterprise flying drones over people's gardens, whatever, then obviously you do have to come back to the data protection. There is still that in place, so it's not just like if you are flying in your garden, let's say you're a builder, for example, and you're flying your drone to capture roof inspection, for example, and you're flying over other people's properties, there is still that data protection that you've got to consider, which is not as stringent for the public if it's just for public use.
Yes, broadly speaking, yes. So there is also the incidental inclusion as well. So even if you are a commercial photographer and you're commissioned, again, I say using the church example because they're always in a square in the centre of town and there's people walking by, so it's easy to visualise. If you are commissioned to take photographs of that church as an enterprise, so obviously as a business, data protection is automatically engaged. But if someone is incidentally included in the photograph, that's not a breach of their privacy. It's not a breach of the Data Protection Act just because they're included in the photograph. What could make it wrong is if it's permanently watching a certain area where people are coming and going. But even then, the business would have to consider whether those people are readily identifiable.
Right.
So in a nutshell, boiling down the Data Protection Act, if someone is not identifiable readily from an overhead aerial photograph, then it's not engaged anyway.
Because
you can't see who they are.
So obviously, if we're not talking about people, but it's a person's property, and this is something that actually has been asked quite a few times before. So nobody, let's say, for example, there's nobody in the gardens. We're shooting a property. Mm-hmm. There's a property to the right-hand side. We're shooting the property on the left-hand side. We've captured, incidentally, the property on the right-hand side as part of this photo. It's only a little bit, perhaps half, but we've captured something gone. There's nobody there. Where do they kind of stand with that? Because there's nobody identifiable, but their property is in the shot.
Well, there's no real issue with it. You have to look for what the issue is. And so if you remind me in case I forget to come back to what you do with that information afterwards. But the issue is in the data subject, as they're known, the person, and whether any one piece or a collection of pieces of information taken together can identify that person. Then it engages the Data Protection Act. And the requirements therein, but then only so much as what is necessary, reasonable, and proportionate. So the Data Protection Act doesn't say you can't do any of this. It doesn't say you must not take a photograph if someone is in that photograph. What it does say is it's reasonable and proportionate, or there's some other legitimate interest or law behind it, lawful basis for processing the data in the first place, and so on and so forth. I mean, there are literally courses on data protection, GDPR, and so on, or the retained version, at least for the UK post-Brexit. But it doesn't say you can't do any of this. It just says give thought to it, give thought to what you're capturing and how often, how much, and then is it reasonable? Is it proportionate? And if you decide, well, yes, it's reasonable and proportionate, so we are going to do it, even though we capture this house next door. Even if there's people in the garden next door, if you are, if your job, let's take a hypothetically live example of someone who is contracted to take an aerial photograph of a house for an estate agent to help sell the property. So what you want to do is show this is the area the house is in. It's a great area and it's wide open space, blah, blah, blah. You happen then to catch the neighbors either side, and let's go to the extreme and say there are children playing in the garden. Well, they are incidentally captured in the photograph. They're probably not identifiable anyway. But even if they are, if it's reasonable and proportionate to capture that as the area would have it to show off this house, as long as you keep a record of the decisions that you've made and what's justified those decisions, that if there is any challenge later, either by way of complaint from the ICO to the ICO, or were still a challenge in court that you shouldn't have taken that in the first place, you should then have a documentary record of we captured this, we decided it was reasonable and proportionate, and these are the reasons why. Yeah. The natural question is, could you have done it without them being there? Now, personally, if it was children in the garden, I would wait for them to disappear and take it again. But that's because I err on the side of caution for most things. But for the property, no, not really. I can't really see. You can't get rid of the property or blur it out. Last I checked, Google still obscure the numbers on streets, although I think they've stopped doing that now. The latest ones I've seen, unless it's by accident, they don't obscure it anymore. Be interesting to know why that is. But so yeah, there's no real problem with that either.
Yeah, I see. And also, I guess it also boils down to the photograph. You know, if you look at it, they're not central in the middle of the photograph. If they're right on the edge, you can then see that, you know, they weren't, it was incidental, wasn't it? If they're not the sole purpose of the photograph, because they're not right in the center or something, that helps too, I suppose.
Maybe. Absolutely, it does. It does matter what the focus, what the subject matter of that photograph was, or of the video was. And it's the same as, I suppose it's the same as street photography. You get someone taking a photograph of a random stranger is a common question. But that's out in the street. There's certainly no automatic expectation of privacy in a public place.
No.
A court would be slow to apply one, but would certainly consider it. And so, you know, I mean, again, to take an extreme example so that it's clear, a coffee shop, for example, is a public place. If the assuming the shop coffee shop allows photographs, which they may not, but let's not consider that. But then let's say that there's a discreet corner and there's a lady nursing her child in the corner. If you went and sat there filming it, clearly that's wrong. I'd be amazed if a court agreed that was okay. You know, there's a degree of common sense here. And so if you're not doing things like that and you're just capturing someone because they're either incidental or it's a public place and that's the purpose of what you're doing, then, you know, you may have to document your decisions with regards to data protection. But it doesn't mean you can't do it.
Right. Yes, I see. Yeah. No, it's all very interesting, actually. I think, especially for me, I hadn't really thought of it in that much detail, but it all, as you explain it, makes sense, doesn't it? And I think that's nice to hear. I think so, same for you, Adam, I should imagine.
Definitely. I say most, it almost sounds silly kind of asking these kind of, you know, if there's a property in the shop, but these are genuine questions from our community Facebook group that people ask them, actually. You know, we can't just be like, absolutely, go on, crack on. It's nice to say, well, actually, now we can point you to somebody who can advise. You know, listen to this podcast, we do speak about this, we're not saying absolutely yes or no, but take these into consideration. And, and actually, good thing, actually, what you have said is document, you know, any decisions. I think that's a great thing to do, is any decisions you make, especially as a commercial enterprise,
absolutely
document why you've made those decisions. If you think at the back here, you go, can I be pulled up for this? Document your reasons behind why you've gone ahead.
Absolutely. I say one of my taglines in my videos is evidence is everything. And so I'm prolific. I document everything. So if I'm ordering something expensive, I will literally film the opening of the box. Because if it's broken or it's not there or whatever.
As soon as you've removed that, the seal and capture all that.
Absolutely. In fact, one of my viewers did exactly that, ordered a phone and filmed opening the box, filmed opening, breaking the seal, opening it, and the phone wasn't in the box. But who might believe that otherwise? It sounds far-fetched, but evidence is everything. So again, so coming back on the point, so documenting your decisions as to why you did something, and even if you've planned it out beforehand, if you're a commercial entity and you're planning a shoot for something, you know, I am going to film this, this, and this. These are the things I should think about. I've thought about them. I think it's a reasonable inclusion, a reasonable risk. It's justified. You know, that there may not be an reasonable expectation of privacy in that situation because it's a public place, et cetera, et cetera. Just giving thought to those things ahead of time makes everything easier. And then if something goes wrong, then you can say, well, that wasn't part of the plan, as opposed to you've done this wrong deliberately. If it's done, so in any case, I always think about it, if it ends up in court, naturally it's what I do, because I'm the one going to court arguing about it. So the consistency is everything. That's the reason for the wording of the caution, the police caution, you know. And if you break it down, most people never break this down, but if you break down the wording of it, you know, it may harm your defense if you do not mention now something you later rely on in court. I mean, in other words, people will think you've made it up when you get to court. That's the bottom line. You know, the prosecutor will say to the jury, well, he's just made it up. He didn't say that when the police asked him the question. He didn't say it, you know, later on. He didn't say it. So the same here. If a commercial entity is planning a shoot of some area, and they consider these things and they document it and they have this full record and something goes wrong, and then someone says, you're doing that deliberately to spy on somebody or whatever. If they can show that they've had this whole plan and that wasn't part of the plan, it just happened, then, you know, a judge would look at that and say, well, clearly you've put thought into this, you've planned, you've tried to avoid anything that's unreasonable, you know, this kind of thing. It's much more believable. So it's just about ring fencing your consistency all the way through.
Yeah, that's it. And I think if we
we're tying it back in with kind of your risk assessment and your risk assessment and methodology statement. It's like tie that in, and then you've got it all documented.
Absolutely. I mean, most things are moving to a risk analysis based approach, and certainly from our perspective as a very heavy regulated industry or profession, as you might expect. I say industry because it includes firms. So I've got my firm and I've got myself, and we're both regulated and everything is risk-based. So now what we're expected to do is have a plan to monitor new risks, emerging risks, and plan what we would do if there's a risk that appears that we hadn't thought of. So plan for the unknown and the unplanned and what you'll do about it. And so all of this is risk based. So if this happens, you know, if our lead clerk goes on, you know, sick, what do we do? You have a plan there. So as long as you have a plan, fine. And that's the approach. And that ties nicely back into when I said, you know, it depends what you do with the material once you've recorded it. So somebody, you know, somebody having their Ring doorbell recording any movement that walks past is one thing, and storing it for 30 days and then it gets deleted, which is the reasonable amount of time and so on, that's fine. If someone, on the other hand, is live, again, going for the extreme, live streaming 24/7, a camera pointed at their neighbor's garden, is clearly wrong, isn't it? Yeah. So it's what you do with that material. Likewise, if I take my drone up and I fly it around the cathedral here in Lichfield, which is very nice, and it captures people in there, and I put it on YouTube, which I have, there's nothing wrong with that, because anyone captured is incidentally captured and probably not identifiable anyway. But again, the same applies. If it were a consistent CCTV trained on a certain area, you would then have to ask those questions as to, are the people identifiable, and is it reasonable, necessary, proportionate to be live streaming this on the internet? We've had questions exactly like that we've advised on formally, and that's the position. You know, it's not necessarily a black and white answer. And it remains grey, but so long as those considerations have been taken and the decisions have been documented, then if it's questioned later on, if there's a complaint or a court case later on, you can then say, well, we did consider all of this and it was reasonable, it was proportionate, people are probably not identifiable, it might be public interest, it might be public place, and so on. And as long as you've documented those decisions, it puts you in a better place later on, should you.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. And I guess sort of going back to what everyone's used to or what everyone has seen, Google Street View, everyone's face is blurred out purely because they don't then have to deal with any issues.
Yeah.
It's just a constant thing that they've just done, belt and braces, haven't they, I suppose, just to make sure. And I guess
absolutely.
That's
it's just, I mean, to put it this way, it's probably so much easier for them to do that than to deal with the administrative burden of responding to subject access requests or complaints, or removal requests and things like that.
So
it was just easier just to blur them all out.
Yeah, that makes total sense, doesn't it? Yeah, that's great. I think we're getting towards the end of everything that we've got here, and it's been a really informative episode, Daniel. So thanks so much for coming on. It's been really good fun, actually, and really informative too.
I think there's one area we didn't touch much upon, whether you want to or not, is public and private land, because there's a lot of we get a lot of questions over that as well.
It's a relatively
straightforward answer, I think. If it's private land, then the question follows whether the public have access, which makes it a public place. So a public place being one where the public can reasonably expect to have access on payment or otherwise. And people often confuse that with private land and often assert that it's not private land because the public have got access to it. But that's not obviously not the case. I like to use examples. Think of a supermarket. A supermarket is private land. It's privately owned, but it's made available to the public. Mm. So the key here, it's akin to being a guest or a shopper at that place, as it is taking photographs. In other words, that they can make their own rules. If a shop tells you to get out, you no longer have permission to be on the land. You then become a trespasser. Bringing this for drones, if you're there as a member of the public and there were no strict rule against flying drones, it's probably okay. I do know certain national trusts say we don't allow the flying of drones. Actually, one of them. I think it's funny because it's unenforceable, but they say we don't allow the flying of drones over our land.
Yeah.
Which obviously they can't do, because if I lived next to it and I fly it over the top, bluntly speaking, there's nothing they can do about it. But they could object to me taking off with a drone on their land. And so if they restrict that, then
that's different.
They could throw you off.
So they
could eject you from the premises for doing that because you're breaching their rules, because it's their land, their rules.
Yeah.
Much like in a supermarket, they don't like you taking photographs in a supermarket. If you're taking photographs of a product for your own reference, they won't care. If you're walking around filming, they'll probably care and they'll want to throw you out. I know some auditors disagree with this position, but... that's the case. If they tell you to stop filming, you have to stop filming or get out. And then, at the very least, it's then trespass. And if you keep filming whilst trespassing, it's arguably aggravated trespass, which they can call the police for. So same goes for drones on private land. But for flying over and above private land without permission, if you've taken off elsewhere, again, like I said, nothing they can do about that. Because they don't own the airspace. I think it was the Burstein and Skyview's case that the premises only controls the air immediately above the property, which is enough for the enjoyment of that property.
We actually talked about that in an episode a few months back, actually, and I think we quoted the same case, actually. So was interesting. So I guess that might lead on to maybe the last question. If I'm walking along on a footpath, it's a public footpath, can I take my drone off from the public footpath and fly? That would be my last one, I think, from what I've heard people ask about.
And broadly speaking, yes, that's fine. Again, if there are bylaws that prevent it, I would take the view that those bylaws or any enforcement of them could be challenged. Probably successfully, because they shouldn't, as we've said, they shouldn't interfere with existing legislation. The argument might be, it's a different argument really, but the argument might be as to whether the footpath is a reasonable or safe place to take off. It depends whether, you know, if someone was walking past and complained that it was unsafe, I'd probably agree because they were walking past. And so
I suppose if you're blocking the path while you're assessing taking off, then obviously you're obstructing.
Indeed. Or you're at the very least, there is a very real risk that passerby is going to come into contact with the drone. If it's already up and it was taken up safely and you will wait until there's a safe moment to bring it down, then that's probably okay, because there's enough footpath, you could quite easily say there will be somewhere safe to bring it down. So that's probably okay. I think the difference is if you were taking it off whilst someone's walking past, that would be I'd have a problem with that.
Or the footpath super busy and stuff like that, you know. But then you're sort of contradicting the CAA's rules anyway. So
it works. And it's common sense. I mean, I know with the Mavic Mini 2, which I have, the little one, so you know, almost no restrictions with that beyond common sense. But even so, I've been to an area before now. I've just thought, you know, there's too many people here. There will be a complaint by somebody, an unfounded complaint, but someone will complain. It's just not worth the argument. and it's not worth the risk.
And it's still there under the assemblies of people, even with a sub 250 gram drone. If there's still an assembly of people, you shouldn't be overflying them. And as you said, you assess the risk. You went, it's too many people. It's probably an assembly of people.
I was some 20 or 30 meters away from that, and I wasn't planning to fly over them. I was going to go off somewhere else. But I just thought it was just, for me, it was just too close.
Exactly.
It's not worth the risk. There were children around. One of them could come running over, what's that, and come running up to me, and whilst it's taking off, and it just wasn't worth the risk. So that was a situation where it would have been perfectly legal, but I just decided against it. And I think that's really draws everything together, doesn't it? If it's if it makes sense and it's a reasonable approach, that's ultimately what any court is going to come down to. Was it reasonable? Did it make sense?
It sort of reminds me of an analogy that we heard at another meeting a long time ago now. They say there's no rules to stop you taking a cricket ball and a cricket bat into the centre of London and smacking the ball as hard as you can. But, you know, why, you know, you wouldn't do that because that's crazy. And it's the same with actually, you know, flying a drone, I think. So as long as people kind of understand that mentality, I think that's quite a nice thing to sort of work alongside, isn't it?
Indeed. Or the more common one is, after being accused of hurting someone with said cricket bat, why did they have it in the first place? And so the question is, do they really play cricket or in the boot for other reasons?
That's it, isn't it?
Obviously, that comes from live cases.
Oh, okay.
real questions as to, you know, this chap had never played cricket in his life, but had a cricket bat in the boot. So
that's for another episode.
Absolutely.
That's it. Well, I think we're there, Adam. Have you got anything to add? I think we've come to quite a nice conclusion, I think, haven't we, there?
That's great. We've certainly covered, I think, a lot of, I'd say, common questions that do come up regularly, even though we've somewhat answered a lot of these questions before, but it's just nice to have somebody professional that can just say, you know what, use your common sense. It's all, most of it is about common sense.
Most of it is about common sense.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, just a few little bits before we sign off then. Don't forget, if you've got any questions, feel free to email them into dronecast@uavhub. Again, if you haven't subscribed, click the subscribe button. That always helps with our ratings, etc. Again, if you haven't reviewed the podcast too, feel free to give us a review and tell your friends if they also might find this episode particularly interesting as well. I think hopefully they will do. So once again, Daniel, thanks very much for being on this episode. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Where can they find you, Daniel? If if they do want to, obviously we know you're on YouTube. Do you have any other avenues that you want to promote?
So it's the same handle for Instagram, Black Belt Barrister, and for TikTok. But mostly I'm on YouTube. And for my sort of not alter ego, but alter thoughts, perhaps on Black Belt Secrets. So sometimes what I might do or think more personally about a situation, I'm now putting onto Black Belt Secrets.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Brilliant. Okay, well, that's it for this episode. Slightly longer than normal, but I think really useful. And I think no one will mind listening to Daniel talking for that long. It was really good. So thanks again. And we'll see you in the next one. Fly safe and blue skies, everyone.